Hey everybody, welcome back to the Bold Sidebar. For my fans that have been around for a couple of years, I want to just say hello. I put it on pause at the end of 2020 to kind of figure out what's the best path for the podcast. I will tell you that there is scarcely anything I enjoy doing more than the podcast, the interviews, speaking to interesting people around the law. However, I will tell you that it was getting a little stale, and frankly, the listenership was not that great during COVID. So I thought, you know what, let me put this thing on a pause and think about it. So then I printed out transcripts of about 36 of the podcasts and read them all to try to figure out what was what. And what I came out feeling was that the Bold Sidebar of lawyer and retired judge interviews all got to two key points: that those guests were grateful people, full of gratitude, enjoyed their career in the law, and were eager to serve. So we got the grateful piece, the gratitude piece, and they were mentors, and they were thankful for their mentors. And they were also good mentees. Hence, within a short period of time, I will be dropping another podcast called The Grateful Mentor Podcast, where lawyers that are grateful will come on, speak with me. I will be dropping my own shorts, which will be just moments of gratitude, something that happened during a given period of time where I benefited. I'll be praising people by name. That's important. And any mentoring moments where someone's mentoring me, or perhaps some things I have learned are being passed on to someone else, are where I'm the mentor and someone else is the mentee. That said, so what am I going to do with the Bold Sidebar? I decided just to totally nerd out. And with the Bold Sidebar, I'm going to devote it to cases, and I find this kind of interesting, and I hope other people will. So I'm going to look at the New Jersey Supreme Court cases, speak to those. I'm going to roll in smarter people than me to talk about the cases, and maybe we'll do one at a time, maybe we'll do batches, whatever I can pull together in terms of a lot of high quality information derived from high quality people. And I'm going to get this going, and then we'll turn everything we talk about in the Supreme Court into some transcripts, and perhaps there's a nice book or booklet that can be generated. So that's the game plan. Welcome for the ride. Let's get to the case that ended 2020, and it will be called Delaney versus Dickey, but really it's the Sills-Cummis case, or the arbitration case. In this case, Mr. Delaney, a sophisticated business person, hired the vaunted Sills-Cummis firm that's been around for ever and ever, and it's a big, well-respected firm for some business litigation, real estate litigation. Their relationship broke apart, and there was a malpractice claim, and this was litigated all the way to the Supreme Court. Not the substance of the malpractice claim, but the retainer agreement between the client and the law firm. I want to speak to some of the players here. Former New Jersey Supreme Court Justice and Attorney General Peter Venero. It's the first name you'll see on the opinion. You've got Glenn Bergenfield, heavy hitter in the professional liability field for decades. You have my friend, who is chair of the solo small firm section, who argued for the New Jersey Bar Association, that is William Denver. You've got Michael Stein, you've got Michael Epstein, you've got a bunch of big players, and then you've got Justice Barry Albin, who wrote the opinion. So you know it's scholarly, you know it's thoughtful, and you know it's punchy. Even though it's a long opinion, Justice Albin does not waste a word in his opinions. So here we go with also Justice Albin does not bury the lead. First words of the opinion. An attorney serves in a fiduciary role with a client at the very inception of the attorney-client relationship, further on the first page. Thus, a retainer agreement is not an ordinary contract governed by the rules of the marketplace, but is a contract that must meet the high standards of the rules of professional conduct. In a nutshell, the Sills Cummins retainer agreement stated that if there are any disputes, that they would be addressed by binding arbitration. Certainly, the trend over one or two decades in the law has been to allow people to opt out for all sorts of matters, even family and child custody cases. You can opt out as long as you follow court rules and really a high level of confidence that the hearings are legitimate, independent, and when people make the decision to opt out of the court system, they're not opting out of fairness, due process, fidelity to the law. Rather, they're saying we can sort of get this done faster, not get in line in the court system. That's probably the main reason. Also, parties can select their decider, their arbitrator, their private judge. So maybe you're picking someone with unique experience in a particular area of the law and or domain knowledge, whether it be construction, transportation, real estate, on and on, securities law, family, child custody. You can really pick an expert to be your arbitrator. So there's a lot of advantages. In this case, the retainer agreement also referred to JAMS, a larger organization that manages the arbitration process, and the JAMS rules apply. The JAMS rules apparently are 33 pages long, and they were not attached to Mr. Delaney's retainer agreement. So, Justice Albin marches through recognition that had this simply been a commercial transaction between two businesses, an arbitration clause would absolutely be binding on the parties. Even if those 33 pages were not attached, too bad. Read your contracts. When you have an arbitration clause and you're two business people, you're going to be stuck with arbitration. In this circumstance, the Supreme Court, following the lead of the appellate division, found that this arbitration clause, not all retainer agreement arbitration clauses, this arbitration clause would not be enforceable. I believe in large measure because of the JAMS rules. There's a question about whether the client could process the impact of opting out for any disputes between the attorney and the client. For example, as Justice Albin cited in the agreement, in the opinion, filing a lawsuit costs $250 in filing fees. The JAMS fees right out of the gate are going to be something like $34,000. Right out of the gate, could certainly be more. So, you know, that's really got to be explained to a client if you want to have an enforceable arbitration clause in a retainer agreement. And that's really the theme, is that the client, even though he was a sophisticated business person, couldn't have known the import or impact of signing away his rights to a jury trial, to participate in the court system, and to jump into the JAMS dispute resolution model without a lot more information, explanation, etc. A couple minor thoughts Maybe it's editorializing by me, but I was a little surprised, frankly, that a law firm dropped an arbitration clause into a retainer agreement when there's been no court rule speaking to that issue. Rather, it seems kind of hands off. If there's disputes between attorney and clients, there is, of course, the fee arbitration process, which is designed to be a workaround for court and to keep folks from having to go through laborious discovery and managing a case that's in court and get right to the heart of the matter with two lawyers and a non-lawyer, a layperson, handling those disputes. Certainly, you cannot contract out of that as a possibility. It's the client's option whether they want to participate in fee arbitration, but you can't contract out. Likewise, you cannot contract out claims for professional liability. You cannot say, client, our liability is limited to $10,000, even if we make a substantial error. In a normal commercial transaction, you may very well be able to do that, and that would be an enforceable contract between two willing buyers and sellers. The rules of professional conduct are going to serve as an umbrella over top of all of the attorney-client relationship, including that intake and the signing of the retainer agreement. I suppose the client could have read the agreement and said, "What is this jams thing?" and gotten those 33 pages and gotten a better explanation. Certainly, that's what the court's saying, that if you're going to have people bound by certain rules, you've got to at least give them the rules. Kind of makes sense. On the other hand, one of our rules, court rule, requires that in the case that you're being retained by a new client, that they are on notice that they can have another attorney review the retainer agreement. That's in all the standard retainer agreements. It's a good provision. I suppose it's kind of in the nature of the warnings on a pack of cigarettes. I don't know that any client of mine or that I've ever heard of a client taking the now trusted lawyer's retainer letter or retainer agreement to another lawyer to have it reviewed. Perhaps Mr. Delaney and others that are taking a look at this case might do so in the future. But practically speaking, it's honored in the breach that anyone takes their lawyer's retainer agreement and runs down to yet another lawyer to have it reviewed. Certainly, those that have in-house counsel, corporate counsel, that are participating in the hiring of outside counsel are going to read those retainer agreements more than a, let's say, quote unquote, regular business client who's coming into the law firm looking for some representation in a piece of litigation or in a transaction or for general advice. They're not running to another lawyer to have their retainer agreement looked at. And of course, we always say this, no one expects problems to arise, especially attorney-client. We want our clients to get excellent representation and have good results and understand the process well. And not end up in claims, and very, 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 very few cases actually ever end up in claims, contrary to what we might think. So this is a very interesting opinion. It came out at the end of 2020, and it's kind of the start to me of the 2021 Supreme Court season. We will speak more to the cases as they come up. So again, thanks for listening in on this kind of changed format, bold sidebar. If anyone has a Supreme Court case they've litigated, please I want to speak to the cases that are interesting and speak to people's experiences in getting the case in front of the court, getting through the cert process, and substantive cases as well. So thanks for hanging in here for the restart of the Bold Sidebar as a sort of Supreme Court observer. And please go on iTunes, press those buttons, give those ratings and reviews. It's apparently the only way that a podcast that's not run by a major network is going to get any traction and visibility. It's my pleasure to do it. My pleasure to speak to these issues. I look forward to hearing from you. It's Jeff Horn. Easy enough to find. And please find us on Apple iTunes and give us a nice rating. Thanks a lot.